afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, how's it going this week?
Hey, it's going pretty good. Nice, cool weather here in Redding, California.
I know.
What are we sitting about, 75?
I'm wearing a jacket. So great.
Yeah.
And the free advertisement of the week goes out to the hot water plumbing hero, Robert Gutierrez, here in Redding. He came in to replace some faucets for us. It was a huge pain. And it's always nice. I've never really hired a plumber to do something like replace a faucet. But it just looked like it was going to be a huge pain.
And it was.
So I was working downstairs, and I hear, dun, 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 dun. I hear the walking upstairs, and I hear the garage door shut. Comes back in, dun, 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 back into the bathroom. I went upstairs. I'm like, how's it going? He goes, I'm having some problems. I was like, I know. I could hear the dad walk upstairs. Dad walk, dead giveaway. Just confirmation. It was a great idea that I did not do that, that we did not do that ourselves. So I'll post his information on the site for today. But the hot water plumbing hero is truly a hot water plumbing hero. And today we're talking with Fred Dasmalchi. And let me update my page because we added people. I'm going to have him introduce his other two friends. And we're going to discuss Iran. We're going to talk about the kind of the deal, how they got here, what their vision for the future is, and all of those things. And to give it some context, Fred is a resident of Sacramento, has been a human rights activist for over 30 years. He was arrested once in 1980. I'm not going to hold that against him. That normally makes him sound like a bad guy, but that makes him a good guy. He was in the city of Mossad. After that, he was forced to leave the country. And he came here. Good thinking, Fred. He increased his human rights activities to be the voice of people in his country. He has been active in this in his community, mobilizing the Islamic community in Sacramento against the Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. I met him at a Marco Rubio event with his friend Ross, who has since passed. We miss Ross. Ross was a really nice man. And met them like 15 years ago, and I have learned and then roped Bill into the radio, and then we've all learned lots of things that we would not have found out had we just listened to what was on the mainstream media. They're very involved in the Iranian-American community of Northern California, and I have all of that posted. There's a tremendous amount of information on there, actually, and today is June 28th, 2026. If you want to jump on wethepeopleradio.us, you'll find it all there. So those are all the announcements for today. And so, Fred, you get to be the master of ceremonies, or the ringleader, I guess, depending on how we look at it.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, Bill. And
hello, Fred.
Thank you so much. Hi, how are you, Bill? How's everything?
Doing well. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you so much for Aaron and Bill for inviting us. I really, really is honored to be on your show and appreciate it, you know, the voice you're giving to us. And
well, the suspense has been killing us because we have wanted to have you on, and then you had the big event in Paris, and there's been a lot going on in the world. So we're grateful that you guys were able to make the time, because there is a tremendous amount happening, and we don't always get the whole story. So
yes, absolutely. This is a very, very important time. Because what's going on in Middle East and the war is going on right now, and there are a lot of questions. First, I would like to appreciate it for remembering my friend Ross. You know, thank you so much for Aaron for mentioning Ross' name, and we all miss him. He was also one of the human rights volunteers that was working very hard for regime change in Iran.
Yes.
Therefore, briefly, if it's okay with you, I will introduce, I will give some information about our activity.
Yes, please.
I am a board member of the Iranian American Community of Northern California. Overall, we are supporting the regime change in Iran by the people of Iran. and practically we're trying to be a voice for Iranians. And also in that, we are very active covering Congress and Senate. For example, in Congress, we have the, during the Christmas, we have the Christmas party. We do a lot of briefing in Congress. We have a lot of resolutions to support the human rights in Iran and condemn terrorist activity of Iranian government. For example, House Resolution 166, House Resolution 1188, or Iran Resolution 100, which usually all our resolution is bipartisan, and also all our resolution usually we got the majority of the Congress. For example, the latest resolution, House 166, we have about 230 members of the Congress that they support that, and that resolution is by Congressman Tom McClintock. He's a very much leadership regarding to Iran. And to be honest with you, we are all, myself and my friend, we are all volunteer for human rights, and practically we are very active, try to be active towards the free Iran and have a secular republic, a non-nuclear Iran. That is what we are looking for, and that's what we are working for, and trying to be helpful in that area. Today, I have two of my friends that are joining me. If it's okay, they can introduce themselves, please. Thank you. Chano, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Aaron, Bill. Thank you for having us in your wonderful radio program. I'm Shanaz, and I'm a healthcare consultant for Center for Healthcare Quality. I came to U.S. Since Fred mentioned how he got to the U.S., I thought I should share mine. About almost 47 years ago, I was a teenager. My family, they were so fed up with me. They sent me here. I arrived in U.S. almost a week before the hostages, U.S. embassy hostages, was taken over. And since then has been such a ups and downs of what's going on in the country that I came from. I've never been able to go back. But at the same time, I wanted the same freedom, the same values that we have in this beautiful country for Iran. So that's where I stand. And thank you for having me.
Thanks. And that's a very common, seems like all of Fred's friends came here and then said, gosh, we'd really like to fix the country we came from, but either they were not allowed to go back. Are you allowed to go back? Probably not anymore, huh?
No, I'm under blacklist.
Yep. Okay. You know, we seem to gravitate toward the blacklist people. We have a lot of blacklist Chinese people too, so
yeah, blacklist for a terrorist regime. That's a badge of honor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The same way they're putting like former Secretary Pompeo is on blacklist of the regime and even China, you know what I mean? And also other U.S. officials, they go on the blacklist of these criminal regimes.
It's always nice to be hated by your enemy, right?
Yeah.
If you know you're on the right team.
Yeah.
And then we have a third player.
Yes, my name is Jarlath Mirabtov. First, I would like to thank you again for giving us the opportunity to be on this program. And I'm not going to repeat what my friends already mentioned. Just like the other two, I came to U.S. way back 1977 to do my graduate studies. And I'm a retired transportation engineer, worked for City of San Francisco. And I'm politically active in support of democracy in Iran. And that's what has been our goal. Democracy. We need democracy for Iran and the region. You know, that's what we have been pushing for. So to that extent, I'm glad to be here, and any question would be happy to answer. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really important. We spend a lot of time hearing from people who talk about this issue but don't come from there. That's not their country of origin. They don't know the culture other than what they have learned. But you have all lived that. And I think the most interesting thing for me in a lot of this is that Iran was not ever really, like we were talking about in this country, there's, you know, the terrifying trend towards socialism here. And so even if the far left socialist and however you view it, but even if those folks came in and started to kind of rewrite things in our government, we could go back. We could go back to our constitution and reset at some point. You don't have that reset point, from my understanding. You literally have to create something new. Is that right?
Absolutely, you're right. If you look at the history of Iran, it has been more than 120 years that we have two systems. One was the Pahlavis before that, and one is this Islamic Republic. The both of them, the Iranian people, they never had a voice. They never had any election, real election, and they never had a freedom. And I think this is a good chance for us to talk about it, that what direction do we need to go? The main question, Iranian government is not practically is causing a lot of problem in that area for everybody and is not stable. Therefore, the question maybe we can help today, what direction shall we go to bring the stability to that area? Especially after the war right now, there are a lot of questions about what direction, what is next, or what next question maybe, how the regime change in Iran coming, or maybe what will be the future of Iran, and what the people of Iranian, how organized they are for regime change. What is situation of the last three uprising? Is it there is more uprising coming or not? What happened to the negotiation between the Iran and USA? What is the outcome? These are all good topics that the answer will fit to your question, Aaron.
Well, we're going to, since it sounds like you have actually planned, we're going to let you make sure we hit all of those, because all of those are important, and that doesn't, you know, much of what we hear in the news is only a couple of minutes long. And in a couple of minutes, you can't get to the bottom of any of this. And I'm sure after you have all lived in this country for a while, you realize Americans, they don't even know a lot about America sometimes, and they certainly don't always know much about the rest of the world. And so I think it's important to educate people, because they look at everything through the lens of our country. And the first really big misconception is that you're going to go back to a time before these people took over the country and it'll all be great. You know, blueprint's already there. You're going to go back and do that. And I don't think people realize when you're talking about a resistance movement, you're like retooling the framework of your country. It's a much heavier lift than just getting rid of some bad people and kind of going back to a place you've already been. You've never even been to the place you want to go. I think that's kind of exciting, but super hard. How about this? I just realized it's, as Bill pointed it out, Good job, Bill.
Oh, thanks, sure.
Thanks for being the boss of me.
Not a problem.
we have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to start working down Fred's topics there, because I think they're all excellent. And we thank our guests for being here today. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America. Every time that flag's unfurled, they come to America. Got a dream to take them there. It seems so far away. We're traveling light today. In the eye of the storm. In the eye of the storm.
Great choice, Aaron.
Well, I figured since they all came to America, we had a song for that, right? So, it seemed fitting. All right, so now that you're here. And have been here, and you're looking back and thinking, all right, I really applaud all three of you, actually, and all the people in your organization for not just saying, well, we got out, we have a good life, you know, kind of sucks to be everybody who's stuck back there under all of this and just move on with your life. It takes a lot of effort to stay tied to that and stay working, for the freedom of the people that are there. That's a big deal.
Thank you so much for that. Of course, you know, it is, as a human, it is an honor to be helpful. And based on what we know from Iranian culture and all my friends, we have been here so many years in the United States and enjoying the freedom. United States is an honor if we can help in this such a critical time. We can be helpful, you know, but with what you are doing is a blessing for us.
Well, I think that's great. So, Fred, you had a long list. Let's get into some of that. Where would you like to begin?
I think if it's okay with Bill and you and my friends, you start with the war, if it's okay. What's
sure.
going on right now? What direction is going? Is it okay?
Oh, yeah. We have no needs. We're just following along.
Because, Aaron, I think a lot of people, they are asking the question, the main question, what is the next? I mean, what's going to happen now? We know the MOU between United States and Iran is on working process. Therefore, the question is that what direction is going? What's going to be the outcome? The other question, the war cannot go for a long time. Therefore, what happened to the situation of the war with Iran? And also, next question is it bombing and war is going to bring regime change in Iran or not? Therefore, I think these are valid questions. If we can analyze this question, I think it's going to be helpful. I think these are good questions.
Okay.
Therefore, I will start first. I would like to say that us, Iranian people, we really, really appreciated what President Trump has done for elimination of the supreme leader of the Iran. That has been by 90% of the Iranian inside and outside of the Iran, they really celebrate that. And we are so thankful to the administration by doing that. Because, as you know, Supreme Leader Khamenei, he was an evil person. And he caused not only so many Americans, you know, in Iraq, they got killed, and so many people in Middle East, you know, have been killed by the Iranian government system, the way they have done in so many countries. But we realized that during the bombing in Iran, there was no uprising. What I would like to add, when there is a bombing in Iran, it's very hard for Iranian people to come on the street and do the uprising. Because what happened during that time, everybody's thinking about their family health, the practically to escape, and then they have seen to word that the uprising is happening. Therefore, what we said, practically the bombing is not going to bring regime change in Iran. Therefore, in that case, what we have seen after the first war, Israel and Iran, we saw after some time, 2-3 months, there was gathering of the people on the street for example, the worker, the retired worker, the student, the nurses. They come on the street and they demand for better situation. And usually after that, when there is so many, so all the union, all these people, they come on the street, then uprising is happening. Therefore, what you're thinking, hoping is that by understanding that, therefore, the war in this case is helping Iranian government to stay for longer. What they do, they use the war as a practically to increase the number of execution, and also practically that is not going to help for regime change. Even though it's appreciated the pressure, as much pressure, sanction we can do against Iranian government. But that time is very, very hard to bring regime change. Therefore, in that case, I would like to say that for last 40 years, we have seen what happened, if you remember, the Biden administration, they put money in the airplane and they sent to Iran. That is not practical. That is not helping. Therefore, the way I look at it, go back to that MOU, that between United States and Iran, the nature of Iranian government is not for change. Iranian government cannot change their behavior. Therefore, they are just trying to survive, and they took as much pressure to survive under the Trump administration, therefore they won't change, and then maybe, they can survive. That is practically their policy regarding to the negotiation. I mean, the negotiation is good. There's nothing wrong with negotiation. But the way we understand 40 years experience of this Iranian government, they cannot change their behavior. And they're going to stay same path, practically. That's why we think the key to Iran is the organic change by the Iranian people. The Iranian people last 3 years, they have done 3 major uprisings. So it shows they are ready for regime change. Therefore, the thing that is missing in this negotiation is the Iranian people. That is what we need to add to this element to bring the regime change. I, if my friend Shahnaz and Jawad, they want to add to it, or if you have any question, please.
I just want to add, the clerical rule has lasted for 48 years through warmongering, a massacre of the people, execution, imprisonment, and they're well known to be a warmonger regime. They live with crisis. By suppressing its own people, exporting its medieval ideology and terrorism to the region through its proxies. And right now, at this time, with the war, which it was mostly targeted the IRGC and the regimes, missile centers, nuclear, whatever, facilities. This has put more pressure on Iranian people. It actually increased the internal crisis within the country, and at the same time, regime, by suppressing the people, is trying to survive. So the regime, the war has helped the regime, in my opinion, although it destroys a lot of their infrastructures, to use it against the people. And as Fred says, the goal of our organization, our thing is the regime can only be changed by the people, with the fresh boots on the ground. The bombs and missiles cannot change the regime. And as long as this regime, this system is in place, there won't be real peace in the Middle East for the world. Regime is not going to ever abandon its nuclear program. And as you see today, there was news of that they are in their thing, why are we doing that? So there's an internal crisis going on that they're fighting with each other. Who is dealing with these MOU? While the negotiation is going on, they are attacking ships. Today they attacked U.S. Military bases in Bahrain and Kuwait. So this regime asking for the war, and it just, in my opinion, that's how it's lasted so long. Hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, the other
can thing? I add a point?
Yes, please.
Well, I would like to give a bigger picture of the whole situation. We are against war. We are against appeasement policy, and we are for regime change. So this is the picture. Why we are against war? It goes back to the nature of the regime. This regime, the Islamic Republic of Iran, what they call Islamic Republic, which is not to me neither Republic nor Islamic. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But
yeah,
this regime is way backward. It's very reactionary. And because it cannot deal with social, cultural issues of 21st century, therefore they need crisis. And since day one that they came to power, or they were brought to power, they have been creating crisis one after another in order to get the attention of the people away from the main issue. So we need to, when the society is actually in normal situation, they tend to do uprising. So that's why we think that, you know, there shouldn't be any external war. There has been a war between Iranian people and the regime going on for more than 50 years. And, sorry, my dog is barking.
We have one at home, too.
Okay. I'm going to let him out. So that's what is going on. You know, this is a reactionary regime which needs crisis to live. You know, without crisis, they cannot survive. So war is a crisis. It's a good issue to give to get the public's attention away from the main issue. So that's why we are against war. That's why we are against appeasement. And we are for regime change. We want to change this regime and establish a democratic republic, a system where people can be represented, where women's rights can be respected, in minorities, you know, can be respected. So that's all for now. Thank you.
Well, and in all of that, what's the mechanism for the people to actually complete the transformation? Because our understanding, my limited understanding, is that they're basically unarmed.
Aaron, this is a really good question. That is a good topic that we have a lot of good information for that.
Oh, good.
Therefore, I just summarized that based on last conversation. We practically what we said, we like sanctions, we like pressure on the Iranian government, we like get rid of the IRGC. We appreciate all the help, but the conclusion become that the bombing is not going to regime change because Iranian government has got more than 1 million IRGC. That and also practically, I don't think the people of the government of United States or the people of United States and nobody wants to send a, you know, full-scale war because in Iraq we send about 150,000 soldiers to be able, you know, to revenge event to the war in Iraq. But in Iran, the area is three times wider. Area is bigger than Iraq, and we need to send a lot more soldiers. And I don't think that is a good option. The reason for that is because now we go to the next topic to show you that there are a lot of Iranians for regime change, that we don't need to send the boots on the ground. When there is Iranian people, they are ready to fight, and they show that. But go to your question, how to arm, is it they have the arm, or do they need the arm, or what's going to happen? And to answer that question, we cannot just go and say, okay, let's send arm to the Iranian people and throw the arm at them. That is not working. We need to have an organization. That organization need to be inside Iran to train the people. It takes time to train them and teach them how to use and how to be organized and to have a network. In Iran, you won't see that much on the news, but there is a network of the Iranian resistance inside Iran. Practically, NCRI, National Council of Resistance of Iran, 12 years ago, they started on this project. They call resistance units inside Iran. Therefore, first, I would like to say thank you so much for putting information online. Therefore, in one of the information you put online today about the resistance units, MEK, on February 28th this year, on Monday, 5 days before the war starts, 250 members of the resistance units, they attacked Tehran, the headquarters of the Supreme Leader Khamenei. That area is called Motahari. There is more than 5,000 IRGC is guarding that, in that time, Khamenei headquarters, and there are a lot of government buildings in that area. The people who are familiar with the regime, they know that the most secure area in the Iran, in Tehran, is in that location. Therefore, 250 members of the resistance units, they were able to infiltrate in that area and start attacking. So they tried to get, before the war, they tried to get rid of the Supreme Leader Khamenei. Therefore, from 6 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock, there was a fight in that area. And about 100 members of the resistance units, they got killed or they are missing. By Iranian organization, which is very strong network inside Iran, they provide those names of the missing 100 people to the United Nations. And I have those names from what the age they are and mostly young people. And they got killed or they are missing. And the good news about another 150 members, they came back safely to their bases. This is one example of what they're doing. I checked the news today on social media for the resistance units. It has been only last night. There has been 35 operations inside Iran. So just give you another example. The name of the cities they have done is Karaj, Mashhad, Tehran, Saqqes, Boneh. Therefore, regularly, resistance units, they are very active in Iran. But unfortunately, the media is not getting that much coverage on that one. I would like to add two more activity of the resistance units in Iran.
Hold that thought, Fred.
Sure.
And let's do a quick break so we don't have to cut you off in the middle of the deal. I did find a really good song, too, for Javed, so I thought he might think it was funny. And then we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Who let the dogs out? was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey, V.I.O.
And everybody having a ball.
Hey, hey, V.I.O.
Until the fellas start the name calling.
V.I.O.
And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor one shot out.
Who let the dogs out?
Just like everybody else.
Pressure.
You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal.
Great song.
Huh. There is a lot of pressure. But we couldn't resist the dogs.
Yeah.
thank you for the song.
Yeah, we had to get the dogs in there. I'm like, I have the song. Might as well play it. Okay, so go back to your 2 points, Fred, so we don't derail you with the dogs. Huh?
No, thank you for the song, and I'm sure my friend Jawad is going to be very happy.
Thank you.
We're dog people, so you know.
Aaron, Bill, what I was trying to say that we have a very good hope for regime change in Iran. The reason for that is we have a strong network inside Iran. And right now, the Iranian government is at the weakest point. And I believe it's not going to be for a long time. But what I'm trying to mention, what's the reason for that? The reason there is outside of the United States, outside of Saudi Iran, what activity the NCRI or Iranian resistance is doing internationally, and what they are doing also inside Iran. I was trying to prove, to show you that how strong is the network in Iran, and for to be able to send that many fighters to go to that secret area is not easy. It's very, very, very hard job and needs a lot of communication inside Iran. And that shows the power of the Iranian resistance. Two more samples I have in 2023, during the mass uprising, we lost 3,600 missing of the resistance units. Those names also is ready and is provided to International Amnesty and United Nations. Another one, in 2025, we have more than 2,000 of resistance units are missing, which their name has been identified by Iran, by NCRI. My point is that there is a lot of good hope, but what is missing in the equation in negotiation is not talking about human rights in Iran and is not covering, the execution in Iran, but there is another element that is inside Iran. And that's what I try to explain. If you have any question before going to the NCRI, if it's okay with you, and what internationally NCRI is doing, how much support we have, what we're looking for inside Iran for future of Iran, what practically we're fighting for, and if you have any question regarding to resistance units inside Iran, we'll be happy of my friend Shahnaz or Jawad they want to add, or Aaron or Bill, if you have any question.
I wonder, we hear a lot about the IRGC really kind of gumming up the works as far as the negotiations go. How much pull do they still have, and is that power waning a little bit, or are they still going to be the ones that we're going to have to contend with?
It's a very good question. Shannon, would you like to answer that question?
Yeah, I can just say, so IRGC, Iran Revolutionary Guard, actually was created by Khamenei, the first mullah that ruled Iran, to protect the revolution, to protect their clerical rule. And this organization has direct report to Supreme Leader. They controlled the whole economy. I mean, the economy that has the money, has the power, and compared to U.S. military, U.S. military is nothing in compared to them. I believe, my opinion, right now it's IRGC that's running the country. The son of Khamenei, Mojtaba Khamenei, which is missing in action, he's nowhere to be found. We just here and there hear some statements from him. And right now, IRGC is the one that actually protecting and facilitating the nuclear program, the oil industry, the whole import-export industry. So they have a lot of money and power inside Iran, and that's how they feed their proxies in the region, the Hezbollah, the Hamas, the Houthis. They're all under the control of IRGC. So IRGC is the one that I believe are people for the MOU, they are the one that dealing with. And the guy, Alibaf, the one that is the thing, he's the guy that not too long ago was chanting death to America. That's the one that promoting that having a nuclear program is a means of their survival and superiority. IRGC is the one that should be targeted in all fronts, not just militarily. We are glad that U.S. have them on a sanction list, and those sanctions should be enforced. But European countries, they're still thinking about it, to put this terrorist organization on the sanction list. So that was the question about the role of IRGC. IRGC is the one that controls the prisons, who should be executed. You know, they control the judicial system. So they have their hands in everything in that part of the country. One thing that I wanted to add about the inside Iran, what is happening, if there's a long history way before most recent uprising that led to all these uprising, the most recent one that has, you know, thousands of people that were killed. NCRI, well, I'm not going to go through that right now. So maybe in another section I can talk about the role of NCRI and how it has been helping with the internal boots on the ground, how they are fighting and trying to get rid of this regime. And again, our motto is no war, but also no appeasement. And the regime change should be by the people of Iran. We don't ask for any monetary help. We don't ask for any arms. We believe that they can do it without those help.
Well,
so that's it.
There are so many. What did you say? There are a million people in the IRGC?
Yes.
No, I didn't say. Is it 1 million or 150,000 members? The active members of IRGC.
I thought somebody said a million, and I thought my head was going to explode.
Yeah. I think they're so there's IRGC is the arm, more trained form of the thing, and they have Basiji. Basiji are like regular people that they use them, put them in motorcycles to go fight the rallies or something like that. They're more Basijis than IRGC. The IRGC is the highly trained.
Okay. But they have minions. So.
I don't think there are millions.
Minions. Like they have little groups that go out and so bottom line is everybody's being watched at some level.
Exactly.
Okay, because that's what it sounds like to me. Like
every corner.
Yeah, you can't do anything, and they're keeping tabs on you. So, pretty hard to create a revolution when you can't.
Yeah, they control the internet. They control the internet. They control the media. Yeah, I mean, for 3 months there was total blackout of internet in the country. They were afraid to have that. You know, they don't want people to see what's going on in the world.
Well, I think a lot of people were a little bit confused at the inability of the people to really rise up and take their country back when, you know, in the heat of this argument over there. What do you think they need to do to toss the IRGC out? Is that even possible?
It is possible. The way Mathew Rajavi or NCRI that the way they are doing right now is, we know when there is an uprising in Iran, the Iranian government is at the weakest point. And when there is an uprising, if you have an organization with arms and direction and the network, like resistance units, they are all practically, they are all working together. In that time, they have a job to do. In that time, they have the leadership to do. In that time, because each resistance unit during the uprising, there is 50 or 20 more people, young people are joining them. And that will be the force for change. That's what we are working on, resistance units completely inside Iran last 12 years, to create that environment of, therefore, when there is an uprising, that happened. But if you look at each uprising, each one compared to the previous one, it become more radical. And also during this last 3 months, because of the internet was shut and the people economy was getting worse, and therefore 2 million people, they lost their job in Iran. That is creating a lot of problem for Iranian government. And that's why I was trying to mention that usually we'll see the system, how they start small demonstration in different cities, which we can see right now in Iran, and then it gets bigger and bigger, and then suddenly the uprising will come. During that uprising, we have to be ready for regime change. It may take another one or two times, but eventually it's going to bring the regime change. That's what Maryam Rajavi is working on, to practically unite the Kurdish, the Baluchis, all the forces inside Iran. Therefore, we're trying to say future of Iran belongs to everybody, and everybody we need to share to come up with this system to bring the regime change. Then Iran belongs to all these different nations, then practically is bringing unity, more strength for resistance units to change the government themselves, and then practically bring the regime change in Iran.
We have just a minute left before the news, but quick question. If the uprising, does the IRGC then kind of go to work for them? Or do they all have to quit? Or do they all go to prison? Or what happens to these people? Where do you put them? They've got all the arms and the training and...
That's a good question.
I was just curious.
Would you like after the break to talk about that?
Mull that over. And Shavad, we gypped you. Every time you try to get a word in edgewise, we talk over you. Sorry about that.
Okay.
The magic of the magic of the conference call, isn't that how it always works out? So we do have to take a little break for the news. We're not sure what they're going to say, but it isn't going to be as interesting as this. So you should stick with us, and you can find out what's really going on in the Iranian resistance from Fred and Shahnaz and Shahid. And I found a song for the IRGC, so we'll play it now for you.
When I'm in the shower, I'm afraid to wash my hair, because I'm at a